Chapter 16. The Resurrection and the Life.
"Don't shoot him!"
screams Schiller as he rises from his throne, clawing at its wooden arms in pain as he stands.
"Take him alive, for I am the way and the life, saith the Lord."
"Yes, Father,"
Roseanne says meekly, lowering her FN-P90. The barrel of the bullpup submachine gun is smoking slightly where it melted the cuff of her part-synthetic sleeve. The boys aren't waiting for direction. They pile through the gate in eerie silence, drawing batons and tasers in unison. Their hosts ride them with expert precision, coordinating perfectly to fan their mounts out across the floor of the courtyard on the other side. Schiller shuffles round the throne and takes a hissing breath.
"Tell Alex to secure this side, then follow me through,"
he tells the other handmaid.
"Roseanne, help me."
Roseanne goes to his right arm and lifts it across her shoulder.
"Father, will you—"
"The prodigal son will serve, willingly or no,"
Schiller says quietly.
"Through the door, daughter. Lest I'm mistaken, Pastors Holt and Dawes are already beginning Holy Communion. I can feel the life flowing back into me as I stand."
He takes a step forward, then another, gathering strength as he moves. A few seconds later, he lets his arm drop from his handmaid.
"Follow me. Alex's men will be here soon. We need to be on the other side to unseal our Lord's tomb."
The cathedral-sized building on the other side of the gate awes Roseanne. She's dreamed of it for years, even before Father Ray took her for a handmaiden, dreaming in awe and ecstasy that she might be the one to quicken the Lord in his sleep. It's far above her place to hold such dreams, she knows, but even so she is determined to be present at the second coming, and she feels an icy spike of rage at the flippant Englishman who so foolishly turned down Father Ray's generous offer. She tightens her grip on her gun's foregrip. For a butterfly ticklish moment, she'd almost thought Father Ray was going to offer her to the Englishman as part of his ludicrous list of bribes. Not that she does not welcome the idea of fulfilling her duty to be fertile and submit to the husband he will eventually choose for her, but the hot flush she felt for a few seconds in the vestry has left her disconcerted and angry with herself for sinning in her soul. And so, as she follows the Holy Father through the portal to the Holy Sepulchre, her mind is not entirely focused on the job. Johnny rolls as he hits the floor, too slowly, although the bullets cracking above his head like maddened wasps are as fast as normal, and bolts sideways away from the direct sightline of the gate. He knows this place. He heard stories about it on his father's knee as a ween. He knows the layout, for the village kirk reproduced it in miniature. It's in his blood, and he knows just how desperate Schiller must be to complete this ritual now that he's here. Set a thief to catch a thief. Johnny will be having some pointed words with the auditors when he gets home by and by, if Persephone doesn't get to them first. And then there will be a pointed debate among the invisible collegiate membership of Mahogany Row. But that's of no matter right now. What matters here is preventing Schiller from completing the service of possession that he's trying to carry out. That, and maybe escaping with his skin intact, and the Duchess and that Howard guy Lockhart sent along on this caper as an understudy. There's the nave. There at the front of it is the altar of the sleeping Christ, as Dad called it. More like the cryonic suspension capsule of an alien nightmare, if you look at it without God-glazed eyes. The ground is shaking slightly beneath his feet. Are the support systems coming online already? They're elder gods to the superstitious Neolithic tribes who had worshipped them. Ancient astronauts, if you want a more modern metaphor. They're nameless and inhuman horrors either way. There are benches in the nave, half-melted-looking things made out of some kind of crystalline mineral. They're sized for humans, but each seating position is punctuated by a gully in just the right position to accommodate a stumpy tail. Johnny duckwalks behind a pew as the first two bodyguards bound through the gate. He can feel his skin crawling with power in this place, and the throb of blood in his ears is disturbing. There's a curious sense of euphoria, a giddy lightheadedness that seems to come on the back of the distant hymns of damnation filtering through the gate from the church sanctuary back in Colorado Springs. The sacrifices. He's beginning the sacrificial ceremony. Johnny freezes for a couple of seconds, during which the next two bodyguards arrive and fan out on either side of the gate. The sacrifice of souls, joyfully given by their owners, is the most potent part of the ritual, necessary to power the invocation that will awaken the sleeper. All it takes are donations of circulatory fluid from two members of the blood, descended from the ranks of the sleeper's chosen priesthood. There is some archaic genetic manipulation at work here, and other more arcane processes, and the rite of awakening may be performed. Fuck, he's beginning. He needs me here. Willing or... With a pang of embarrassment, Johnny McTavish realizes that he might have made a really bad error of judgment. Not merely bad, the worst. In which case, there's really only one thing he can do. Johnny stands and shouts, "Over here, motherfuckers!" Heads whip round. Then knives fly. "Hand of glory," snaps Persephone, holding out an open palm just as I hear a couple of gunshots. I drop to the floor behind a row of church pews perfectly suited to the hindquarters of deep ones. "I've got it in here somewhere." I rummage in my shoulder bag, end up upending the complaints department on the floor, then drop a spare t-shirt on top of it. Something buzzes aggressively, like a rattlesnake, and I jump back before I realize the ward's broken and the giant isopod is free. Well, fuck it. I find the second and last mummified pigeon's foot and pass it to Persephone, who's kneeling behind another pew with her pistol held at the ready, then go hunting for the lighter, which I pass across in due time. "Make a distraction," she says. "I'm going to sort this out." Then she flicks the lighter, turns transparent, and disappears. I sigh and power up my camera. Just then, I feel an echo of hunger tugging at my attention from somewhere just outside the door. "Not now," I send irritably. "I'm busy." Unfortunately, these are not my feeders in the night. I get a distinct sense of peevish resentment, and then the hunger pressing in on the edges of my mind redoubles. A moment later, there is a great clattering of bones as the front of the Picket of the Damned reaches the entrance and shuffles across the threshold, luminous green worms writhing and twisting in their sunken eye sockets. There's a great shout from the other side of the nave, and then a gurgling scream and another gunshot. The first three walking corpses shuffle towards me. Two of them raise tarnished swords. The third clutches an ancient and rust-speckled rifle with a bayonet the length of my arm. They don't look friendly. I raise the camera and frame them in the viewfinder. One last chance before I blow them back to Mulvania or wherever they came from, before they got swept up in the Russian Civil War and ended up in one of the bloody White Baron's death trains. "I am the Eater of Souls. You are mine to command. Halt!" It's a bit of an exaggeration, if not an outright lie. I am not the Eater of Souls, I'm just his administrative assistant. But for a miracle, the half-skeletonized soldiers stop dead just inside the threshold. I sense bafflement and incomprehension. "Report!" The rifle barrel rises, and rises until it points at the ceiling, in scabrous salute.
"The watch. Reporting, master."
Another three zombies arrive on the threshold, rocking and shuddering to a halt. There are more behind them, the walking undead ruins of a bloody civil war, staked out to die without hope of perpetual rest beneath the racing moons of an alien world, the sentries on the edge of forever.
"It is him," I sense one of them saying.
"It is the lieutenant come to lead us home."
By home, I do not think he is talking about anything this side of the grave. "Enemies have come to wake the sleeper," I tell them. "They must die. There are two allies, an invisible witch and a man with two knives that eat souls. They must live."
"Must they?"
comes a question from the ranks. There's always one. "I'll pretend I didn't hear that. Follow me." And with knocking knees, I force myself to stand up and walk out from behind the row of pews and shout, "Hey, motherfuckers! Over here! Charge!" I hope Persephone appreciates my distraction. Before me, the altar of the sleeping Christ is a plain sarcophagus carved from a single slab of black granite, inlaid with metallic flecks that form disturbing patterns if you stare at the surface for too long. It's 4 meters long, far too big for a human, unless it contains a pharaonic nest of concentric coffins. Not that anyone with any sense is going to go looking inside. Reddish sunbeams track slowly across the dusty flagstones of the temple and drip bleeding from the backs of the empty pews. At one side of the room, a fight is in progress. Two of the black-suited bodyguards are down, twitching in their death agonies as Johnny's knives suck the souls from their bodies. The other two aren't shooting, but they hold batons as if they know how to use them, and they're circling around Johnny McTavish, who, knifeless now, is at a marked disadvantage. A woman in a blue gown leads an older man dressed in priest's vestments towards the sarcophagus. He casts an angry glare at McTavish, but seems satisfied by the man's mere presence. It's not far to the altar, and they're arriving just as I shout and start to run towards them. The woman looks up in surprise, then raises her arms as if in prayer in my direction, only she's not praying. There's a noise like a sewing machine the size of an airliner punching holes in sheet steel. I throw myself at the floor, but she's not aiming at me. She's aiming behind me, at the source of the lurching shadows that careen across the pews. And for all that they're undead, the bodies ridden by the eaters aren't bulletproof. Break enough bones and they'll be reduced to crawling towards their victims, like something out of a Monty Python film, even if the shooter isn't firing banishment rounds. I, on the other hand, am not bulletproof at all, so I hide behind the furniture and make myself one with the floor. The camera. When I made my throw self at planet move, it was attached to my wrist by a lanyard. Now, not so much. I am attached to a lanyard, but no camera. I look around, but I don't see it. It probably slid under a few pews. Well, sucks to be me. I've got a pistol. It'll have to do. It takes me a few seconds to get the damned thing disentangled from my jacket, and then I run into a second problem. I'm used to punching holes in paper targets with a standard issue Glock 17, as used by police tactical response teams, MI5, and just about everyone in the UK who is legally allowed to carry a handgun these days. But this thing isn't a Glock. There are odd-looking buttons on the side, and the grip feels all wrong. It probably has a safety catch. Pausing to RTFM in a dimly lit temple while my pulse is running at warp speed and a deranged Valkyrie with a space-age weapons system chews holes in the landscape isn't an option. So I mentally consign my soul to wherever it is that dead agent souls go, flick the switch or button or whatever that's nearest the trigger guard into the other position, and squeeze the trigger in the general direction of the altar, firing under the pews. Bang goes the pistol, and I nearly bite right through my lower lip as I button up to keep from screaming aloud and giving away my position. My upper right arm is in searing agony, where Jonquil and her posh friends made holes in it last year. Shit, I say very quietly. I haven't been working out on the range since the business in Wandsworth, and it's clearly a non-starter. But... take this pistol. I put it on the floor and give it a good shove, and it goes skittering back behind me. Kill the woman with the machine gun. Rattle, click, crunch. A feeder is crawling towards me. I can feel waves of festering resentment and rage gnawing away at what's left of his mind. For a miracle, he reaches for the gun instead of the warm, pulsing, living leg so close to his jaws. Leg of master. He'd bite me if he could, but he's bound to serve the will of those whose taint I've carried ever since the Brotherhood of the Black Pharaoh fucked up big time in Brookwood last year. Wait, I announce, feeling the feeder preparing to lurch to its feet. First, find a small silvery box. Looks like so. I visualize it mentally. On the floor somewhere. Bring it to me. Then await my order to fire. A fresh burst of automatic fire sprays overhead as the nun with a very big gun lays down suppressive fire. There's a crunch and a wail that dissipates like pollen on the desert wind as one of the feeders falls apart. Then something bangs into my hip. I reach back for it with my left arm, swearing quietly. It's the camera. I push the power button and wait for it to wake up. I hope it's not broken. About 10 seconds have passed, an eternity in a fight. Schiller is now leaning on the altar, holding a cable attached to a pelican case that he'd obviously brought through earlier and stashed behind it. He's exhausted but determined. His handmaiden stands guard beside him, a white-hot blaze of righteous anger, and she's taking regular aimed shots at the walking corpses, who are still stumbling in through the entrance, for all the world like a horde of green-haired munchkins in an early computer game. They're not doing well. This isn't what the feeders were intended for. Maybe half a dozen of the brighter ones are still moving, but they're mostly the ones with enough of a residual sense of self-preservation to use the furniture for cover. If I didn't know better, I'd say the others were trying to get themselves killed, seeking release from their deathless agony. Johnny is... Oh dear. Johnny is down. So is another of the bodyguards, but another four arrived through the gate from the New Life Church while I was trying to become one with the lithosphere. I can feel his anger and frustration and pain, just as I can feel the dry, complacent yearning of the hosts riding Schiller's goon squad. They've come for Jesus' summoning and... Where's Persephone? I blink, bemused, as I open myself up to the world and listen. I can't taste her mind anywhere around us. It's as if she's legged it back through the gate. Oh. Well, that royally buggers everything up, doesn't it? A quick situational audit tells me that I'm up against Schiller, no mean sorcerer in his own right, Our Lady of the Lewis Gun, no less than six security guards with pistols, two of whom are sitting on Johnny McTavish, for some reason they're reluctant to damage him, and the goon squad's boss, Schiller's head of security. In the white hats we have Johnny, out of action, Persephone, out of area, running so fast she's trailing a sonic boom if she's got any sense, six assorted Russian Civil War-era zombies, only one of whom has a remotely modern weapon, and yours truly. It's not looking good, especially because, now that I try, I can feel the hosts in Schiller's bodyguards. Alas, they're too far away to eat. I could try and get closer, but I suspect it would end in tears. I glance at the camera. It's up and running, but the case is very scuffed. More worryingly, the battery icon in the top right corner of the display, which is cracked, is flashing red. Either it's about to run out of juice, or being chucked around the floor has damaged the battery contacts. I look up again. The guards are dragging Johnny to the altar like a very reluctant bride, and the madwoman with a machine gun is staring in my direction, eyes narrowed. For a stomach-churning instant, I think she's seen me, but then I realize I'm between her and the door that the pile of semi-dismembered feeders came through a minute ago. I'm pinned down, I realize. If I pop up to aim the basilisk gun, it'll take anything from a tenth of a second to a couple of seconds to lock onto a target. Meanwhile, I'm in front of the sights of an automatic weapon. Plus, they've got Johnny, and I'm not sanguine about killing people I know, especially if they're human and they're on my side. Fan out, I tell my remaining feeders. Move forward quietly. They intend to raise the sleeper. We are going to stop them. Then I begin to work my way forward beneath the pews, worming along on my belly like the snake in Schiller's Garden of Eden.
Dearly beloved,
Schiller chuckles wetly.
No, wrong service. We are gathered here, as it is prophesied, to bring about the second coming of the Christ militant, who with fire and the sword will sweep all before the triumphant armies of his elect, that the unbelievers be cast forever into the fiery lake, and the reign of God on earth be brought about. It is to our eternal regret that we could not complete the planned conversion of the unbelievers, but the atheist servants of the British government were upon us, greedily spying on our secrets. And so we must bring down the curtain on this eon of sin and perversion as soon as possible. Shed no tears for them, for their damnation is of their own doing.
He coughs, then clears his throat noisily and spits to one side of the altar. Then he turns to face the dark-suited guards who hold Johnny before him, in front of the sarcophagus.
Elder McTavish, the rite of awakening may require the presence of two elders of our bloodline, but only one of them needs to be willing.
Schiller frowns theatrically.
It will go better for you if you are saved first and take Jesus Christ as your personal savior. What do you say?
Johnny tenses. The guards hold him down, kneeling before the altar. They've handcuffed his wrists behind his back, and one of them is in the process of fastening shackles to his ankles. He looks at Schiller with weary contempt.
The thing what's buried under that stone ain't Jesus, me old cock. You've been had.
Really?
Schiller smiles, evidently amused.
I think not, and you're going to burn in hell for eternity, unless you change your mind in the next 30 seconds. But don't take my word for it. Christ will return and prove me right. Enough idle chatter. Sister, pass me the chalice and the needle.
There is a large silver goblet on the equipment case by the altar. Roseanne scans the temple again, looking for signs of motion among the pews, or in the pile of dismembered body parts by the far entrance. She sees no threat, so she reaches out with her left hand to take the vessel, but her eyes never stop their endless scan of the space before her. It takes her a couple of seconds to find the packet of sterile needles on the top of the pelican case by touch alone, but she manages it in the end. Schiller takes a needle and abruptly rams it into the ball of his thumb, squeezing it over the chalice.
Bring him here, the son of Adam's other wife,
Schiller calls.
Fuck you!
Johnny's sudden struggle is not unexpected, and a rabbit punch to one kidney gives the guards time to bend him over the altar, face down.
In the name of the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit,
Schiller intones,
I bequeath this soul unto the tender mercy of our Lord Jesus Christ, who sleeps dead but undying beneath this stone.
There is a knife in his hand as he leans forward to cut. The situation, I decide, is non-survivable. Go, I tell my minions, and pop up from behind my pew like a kamikaze photography buff. Shots crack out. Roseanne, the blonde handmaiden with the gun, fires simultaneously with the skeletal horror I donated my pistol to. She's fast and practiced, and a crackling trail of bullets smashes the feeder's ribcage to splinters, then wrecks the arm that holds the pistol. The feeder's shot misses. For a horrified split second, I stare down the muzzle of her gun as she points it at me, with an expression of frustration rather than hatred on her face. Why won't these pop-up nuisances just give up and die? She's wondering. I watch for an eternity, waiting for the fucking camera to display a green gun sight around her, while her gun clicks, once, and a box pops out of one side. She begins to rotate her arm, turning her gun side down to eject the empty magazine. And just then, there's another gunshot, and a red stain splashes the back of her headdress.
Behold, the Lord will rise again, washed in the blood of the Lamb, and the apostate gets his just reward.
Schiller shouts at me as blood from Johnny's throat gouts across the sarcophagus, splashing into the chalice. Fury and pride twists his face.
You're too late.
Take out the guards, a familiar voice whispers inside my skull.
What the fuck? I spin round and raise the camera, taking aim on the four armed missionaries who are between me and the gate. The red battery icon flashes.
He's not yours to kill,
Persephone's voice rings out. Then there's another crash of gunfire as I simultaneously see four green targeting boxes appear on the camera's display and click the shutter button. I've never looked directly into a basilisk gun's target before. It's a major design fail. I shall have stern words with Pinky when I get out of here.
Go to the gate, Howard. Go now.
I shake my head, unable to see past the green blotches and purple outlines of the four guards, frozen in the crackling flares of magnesium-bright light that have etched them into my retinas. There are more shots. I realize that staying upright isn't a good idea, so I sit down hard, feeling dizzy.
Schiller's down. I'll rescue Johnny.
Persephone's in take-no-prisoners mode, going by the icily professional feel of her thought.
Johnny's dead. I saw Schiller cut his throat. It won't be the first time I've had to raise him. Go!
Everything is very confusing when you're half-blind and in the middle of a firefight, but I could swear the bench is shaking beneath me.
What about you? Don't you need a hand?
A blast wave ripples through me, like a giant door slamming in the near distance. I hear more shots.
I'll be fine.
And I can sense the belief in her mind, a solid rock of self-confidence sufficient to hold a battleship.
You're out of your depth. Go, now!
I don't have to be told a fourth time. I stumble towards the gate, fumbling my way past the pews of long-dead alien worshippers, the blazing human candles of the burning bodyguards, my compass the bright and mindless hymns of the faithful. Somehow I find my way to the other side, and an empty vestry in the middle of a temple full of lost souls. And that is where the Nazgul find me, amidst the other mortal wreckage, burned and half-blinded by the light, clutching a broken camera full of secrets.